Hey everybody, Steve Fretzen here, and if you're ready to take things to the next level, you're going to want to check out my new show, Future Rainmakers. This is where I'm sharing quick, powerful tips to grow your law practice faster and smarter. Check it out today. Listen, give us a kind review, but for now, enjoy the show.
You're listening to Be That Lawyer, life-changing strategies and resources for growing a successful law practice. Each episode, your host, author, and lawyer coach, Steve Fretzen, will take a deeper dive, helping you grow your law practice in less time with greater results. Now, here's your host, Steve Fretzen.
Hey everybody, Steve Fretzen, and welcome to Be That Lawyer. This is the show to help you grow your law practice and be more successful, be more organized, and be that lawyer. So welcome, and I want to just mention, as you probably have been heard too many times, I have another podcast called Future Rainmakers. If you are looking to up your game and get direct advice and tips and thoughts from me and what I teach my clients every day, you're going to want to check that podcast out. I also bring on some clients to kind of share their experiences and give you a firsthand experience and knowledge about what we're doing together. But that's all fine and good. And I'm so excited to introduce Brian. Brian and I met through Rafi Arbel, very, very good friend in the SEO and digital marketing space. Brian, how are you doing today?
Doing fantastic. Appreciate the opportunity.
I got to witness your slice firsthand. You've got a solid, solid slice that if you put it left, it'll go down the middle, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I took a lesson yesterday.
You did. That's good. I mean, I think what I was telling my cousin is I was playing golf with him out in Scottsdale, and I said, I'm really not enjoying my swing. And he's like, what do you mean? I said, well, what do you think the game is? I said, the game is enjoying the swing. If you're not enjoying your swing, then are you enjoying golf? And he was like, his head blew up. I was like, what? He hadn't thought about it that way. But I think that's, that's for everybody to figure out on their own, I guess. Let's start off with our quote of the show. This quote is not really attributed to anyone in particular. There's a couple people that may have said it at some point, but how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? And that's your quote of the show. Brian, welcome, and tell us why that quote is so meaningful to you.
Yeah, so periodically when I do get overwhelmed, and last year was a perfect example with my son, had some pretty significant medical issues for a four-year-old, and running a business, life, dealing with him, things can obviously get overwhelming. And think about things, it's like, okay, all you got to do is focus on the next second, the next minute, the next hour, the next day, the next week, whatever it is. You don't have to solve the world's problems right now. So that's why I said, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time?
Yeah.
Or stole the quote from someone that I don't know.
Desmond Tutu, maybe.
Maybe.
Or U.S. General Crichton. That's a little quick Google search but it says it really is unattributed. But it's a great quote. And I think, there's so much that can overwhelm us in the world. And business development for lawyers, for example, is just so menacing, the thought of it and the time and the energy and the effort. But if we break it down into little pieces, it starts to come together pretty well. And again, you don't have to, own the world in a day. I think it's more of a marathon than a sprint and all those kinds of things. But do us a favor. Let's get a little background. So Brian, you're the president of Shapiro Legal Search. Give us a little background on your life.
Yeah, so I was born in Chicago. First 10 years of my life were spent on Marine Corps bases. My dad was obviously a Marine. And then when I was in fourth grade, went to Northwestern Law School. I grew up out in the western burbs of Chicago, went to University of Illinois, graduated with a degree in accounting, was planning on going to law school, and ended up getting into sales. And then somehow fell into recruiting back in 05 with Adecco, which is one of the big boys, 20 billion plus organization. Left shortly thereafter, started Viridian National Search, which is a technical accounting search firm that I started, like I said, in 06. Brought my best friend Jim aboard in 07. And then we acquired Shapiro Legal Search in October of 22.
Yeah. Really cool. And I do love bringing recruiters on the show because you guys have a unique perspective of what's really going on in the marketplace. And, we're sitting here in mid-October 2025, the economy and the world are all uncertain and crazy at this time. And I feel like legal is going down, employment is going down, and then it's not. And it's like, it's kind of confusing. Can you give people kind of your perspective of the state of legal right now and as it relates to growth and what you're seeing?
Yeah, so we represent about 50 firms nationwide. About 35-ish are Am Law 200 firms. a small chunk of that are big law. So, I mean, we see pretty wide array of firms, and a lot of these firms are national, some are regional, some are boutique firms. So a year ago, 2 years ago, we present a candidate with a $1 million book to, let's say, 10 clients. They get 7 interviews. Now it's the opposite. So we'll, same $1 million book, they'll get 3 interviews and get rejected at 7. Unfortunately, a lot of times when we present a candidate, our clients don't give us the feedback, the specific reason. They'll just say no need. My assumption there, and again, this is across firms. It's not like, the handful or whatever. This is, like I said, 50-ish firms. Yeah, like you said, the economy is still up in the air. A lot of question marks. The risk tolerance is down from what I see.
And so, it used to be, the million-dollar players, to your point, were getting all the looks, and now it seems
Oh,
less
yeah.
so. And then, heaven forbid you're a service partner doing everyone else's work, no clients of your own. What's the atmosphere look like for them?
So, I mean, if you think about it from a firm's perspective, they're paying us a 25% premium to hire a candidate. Most lawyers don't have a book, or certainly call it a $1 million book. I'd say most are on the service side. Firms, can pretty easily hire those folks on their own. They use us to find folks that they can't find. And those are folks with the portable books. That's what we spend all day chasing, those attorneys. So it's a much different play on the service side versus the lateral partner side with portable books. I can certainly get into more detail on the difference there and how we recruit or what clients look for.
But is it more about like there's an op they have an opening, or they're overwhelmed with work and they need to poach somebody or grab somebody that already has 5 or 10 years of experience to come in and just handle the work? And that might be the opportunity or the opportunity for someone that's a service partner.
Yeah, so usually we get those calls, and again, most of the hiring on the service side is done directly, from the firm, not going through recruiters, because again, they don't want to pay the 25% premium. We get the calls when there's a significant need. Usually that happens when a partner dies, gets sick, sometimes retire, although that's typically planned for. But when you have an influx of business that needs to be serviced and that partner can't service it, that's when we get the call.
And so, why do firms like to use recruiters versus having an internal team or trying to do it themselves? What are you and the other folks in the industry doing that allows for a win-win outcome for everybody, for the candidate, for the firm, and for you?
So this is what we do all day long. Obviously, internal recruiters at a law firm spend a part of their day coordinating, talking with their teams, et cetera. All we do all day long is reach out to candidates. So we're going to have different access. I mean, obviously there are certain advantages when a firm reaches out to a candidate directly. There's also disadvantages. So we're able to represent multiple opportunities where obviously a firm can't. They can only represent theirs.
And is it, I mean, how is it set up and structured from a standpoint of you're working with a candidate, you're working with a firm, you're trying to put everybody together and get that win-win outcome, but the firm is paying for you. So how do you balance that to ensure that the candidate is getting in the right place the right way?
I mean, there are certain criteria that our clients will provide us with. Typically, it's book and bill rate. That's a starting point. And then obviously geography. So those three things can typically be knockouts. When we have multiple options, again, a lot of our clients are national. So most of them have offices in New York City and DC. And then certainly as you move into, some of the other markets, like Los Angeles, a lot of our clients have offices. There are not as many as in New York or DC, but our job is to present opportunities to the candidate. I'd say we're definitely more focused on the candidate, making them happy, finding what they're looking for. On the lateral side, that's when a client is agnostic in terms of this practice they're looking for, et cetera.
And what so I'm just trying to figure out too, like the mindset of an attorney moving laterally. I'm assuming that you find out from the candidate what their motivation is to move. Is it money? Is it culture? Bad culture? Is it lack of transparency? I mean, what would be the top 2 or 3 reasons why someone decides after 5 or 10 years to leave a firm and go look for a new home?
Yep. So obviously, when you're in a, again, I'm assuming we're talking about laterals,
Yeah,
you
we'll
know,
talk about
with
laterals with million-dollar books.
yep.
That's fine.
Yep. So I mean, obviously, it's a pain. I mean, there's no doubt that's a pain. So according to Tony Robbins, people move either to avoid pain or gain pleasure. And I ask that question always, what would cause you to go through this pain of making the move? Because there has to be something significant there. You know, someone's not going to move for 10 grand or, you know, 20 grand, whatever it is. The number one reason I get is support. You know, I just don't have enough support. I'm losing clients, or I'm not able to go out and get new clients. I mean, I talked to a 74-year-old partner out of an Am Law 200 firm, $5 million book. He last year billed out 2,500 hours, which is a ton. And the reason is he didn't have support. So he's looking for support. That's probably the number one reason. And I would say that's across the board. Doesn't matter geography, practice area, firm. It's across the board. So I hear that quite often. A close number two is compensation, without a doubt.
And someone that isn't, being supported and has to bill all those hours and maybe do their own admin and and meanwhile they've got this big book and they want to go build more, but they can't because they're pigeonholed to the billable hour. And one of the main things I work on with lawyers is building business and learning to delegate. But if the firm doesn't support the delegation, then you're trapped. And that's the service partner trap that people have, but also could be a partner trap too.
And you'll have certain firms that don't compensate as well as others for originations. You know, they're more focused on the working hours, which obviously there's a limitation there in terms of working hours. You can only, you know, what, 2,500, 3,000 max. Whereas, you know, if you can go out and generate 10 million or 15 million, have someone else do that. I mean, that, yeah, sometimes the goals don't align with the firm, and that's another reason you'll get folks looking to move.
Mean, something that I've been hearing much more lately than not with big firms, 1,000+ person firms, has been a real lack of transparency as it relates to these associates and even partners who don't know what the comp is. They don't know what their origination is. They don't know, like, there's no communication, there's no transparency about what they can make if they do this or if they do that or if they get elevated. Like, they're all in the dark. And even when they have advocates, they just either don't ask the questions or it's just sort of like an unwritten rule. You just do your job, be an advocate for the firm and hope for the best. And I'm just like scratching my head at that.
Yeah, no, I hear that often as well. And there are certain advantages to an open comp versus closed and vice versa. So I'll give you an example. I mean, obviously on open, you know exactly what you're going to make, you know, the formula to make whatever it is, which on closed you don't. Now the advantage on closed comp is that you can have a $1 million producer. Let's say you've, you know, a person that's been with the firm for 5 years, they're making 400,000. I present a candidate $1 million who's looking for 450. They really want that person. Obviously, if that 400K person found out they just hired someone making 50K more, you know, with less experience, they're going to be pretty upset. That's an advantage of the closed system. Again, this is above my pay grade, but there are certain advantages to both sides. But most rainmakers like the open comp.
Knowing what you have to do, knowing what the origination
Exactly.
is, how you're going to get compensated. And it's easier. It's also easier for planning. Like, you're planning trips, you're planning for college, you're planning for all these different things and expenses you have, and not knowing, I think, is a little freaky.
Yep.
Hey everybody, as you know, one of the biggest challenges that law firms and lawyers face is hiring. Many attorneys know they need help, a virtual assistant, paralegal, legal secretary, but just don't have the time to find and vet the right person. Well, that's where hireparalegals.com comes in. They do all the heavy lifting, pre-vetting top candidates who are in your time zone and ready to work. Firms save hundreds of hours every year and can hire for as little as $2,000 per month. And for Be That Lawyer listeners like you, you're going to get $500 off your first hire when you visit hireparalegals.com and use the promo code STEVE. With proven SEO and digital marketing strategies that drive actual clients to your firm, Rankings.io prides itself on proof, not promises mentality. The best firms hire rankings.io when they want rankings, traffic, and cases other law firm marketing agencies can't deliver. Get more rankings, get cases, and schedule a free consultation at rankings.io today. Hey, Be That Lawyer friends. If you're looking for smarter ways to grow your law practice and want to stay ahead of the curve in legal tech, business, and strategy, then it's time to check out Legalverse Media, the go-to hub for lawyers who want more. This international platform connects you with global thought leaders through articles, podcasts, webinars, and interactive forums that are shaping the future of law. Explore everything with a free 14-day trial, including early access to tools, peer discussions, and a chance to build your brand as a thought leader. Don't wait. Visit LegalverseMedia.com and register for membership today. Hey, everybody. It's Steve Fretzen. As the you know, I'm the host of the Be That Lawyer podcast. And if you're serious about growing your law practice, let's talk. I've coached hundreds of attorneys to build bigger books of business without selling, chasing, or wasting time. This isn't a sales pitch. It's a real 30-minute strategy session to explore what's possible for you in your practice. Just head over to Fretzen.com and grab a time that works for you. And let's make this your breakout year. All right. There's people that are considering leaving and moving laterally. They're talking with you. What are some things that they need to start working on to get prepared for that type of a move? Because like you said, it can be quite painful to leave and go somewhere else and deal with the fallout of that, especially if you have, you know, a really good relationship with the firm. You've been there a long time and no one's expecting it, but it's sort of happening behind the scenes. How does a lawyer prepare for that?
You're talking in terms of moving clients or actually the interview process?
An individual lawyer that is looking to move. They're working with you, they're talking with firms, they're interviewing, but they have to prepare for not only the interviews, but they also have to prepare for how they're going to manage the fallout of leaving a firm.
Yeah, so a couple things. One is that you'll want to have your numbers, you know, for the LPQ. That's a major pain for a lot of folks. The more data you have, the easier it is to, you know, get that data quickly. Number two is that the interview process takes time and you have to set that time aside. You know, let's say if I present a candidate to a client, they say, yeah, I want to interview the candidate, can't interview for 2 weeks. That client's thinking like, okay, they're not that interested. They're not serious about a move. And that could kill a deal, even though they may be, they just haven't set the time aside. So yeah, you have to set the time aside because it is a time-consuming process, and yeah, it's a pain in the butt, no doubt.
Yeah, and then what about the other side of it? And successfully, you know, getting placed or successfully, you know, looking to move and things are moving in a forward progress. How are people getting prepared, lawyers getting prepared to deal with the fallout at home at their firm, current firm?
So when we typically don't get involved on the backside. There's separate teams. Our dealings are mainly on the operational side or the recruiting team. Yeah. There's obviously separate teams that do the onboarding and things like that, that will, you know, communicate with the potential clients that they're bringing. Ask that question in a different way.
Yeah. I mean, so there might be some, like, there's buyer's remorse when you are looking at another firm thinking the grass is greener, leaving something that bothers you at your current firm, lack of transparency, poor culture, maybe low comp, whatever. And people have to navigate not only leaving, but also the fallout of how you do take clients with and how the firm's going to react and how you can maybe maintain relationships when they're angry because, you know, they thought you were a team player and that you were going to stay forever when in reality, you've been sort of plotting behind the scenes this move.
Yeah. I mean, my advice is always to be thankful, you know, for the opportunity and that a better opportunity came up, to not leave the door open for a counter offer. I mean, if you Google, you know, effects of counter offers, I forget the exact stats, but, you know, it's a pretty significant number of folks that when they do take a counter are not with the firm 12 months later, because that issue most likely is going to be there. It almost always, I mean, I can't tell you how many times it's happened to me where a candidate of ours takes a counter and then, yeah, 6 months, 9 months later, they're gone. They have a target on their back. The issue 99% of the time is not resolved.
Yep.
So, yeah, they end up leaving and it's best to do it on your terms versus theirs. Because believe me, if you're looking for a job after, you know, having the heat on, that's not a good position to be in. When there's a firestorm, you want to look on your terms when, you know, things are going well.
One of my clients left a firm recently that he was really happy with, but he got approached by a recruiter. The deal was significantly higher. And he's built a great book under my tutelage and working with me, and we're both very happy about it, trust me. But the offer he got was significantly higher. And then when he went to tell his firm, they offered to kind of come close to matching it. And it really rubbed him the wrong way because he felt like, you know, here, you know, he's been working for, you know, for pennies instead of nickels or whatever we want to say. And he felt like, you know, a little too little too late. And he was kind of like put out by the fact that they were willing to match a much bigger offer and that he had all that money left on the table, that they really hadn't been maybe treating him properly from the get-go.
Yeah. I mean, why not make your employees happy and put your best foot forward to start instead of having them ask? And I understand both sides, but yeah, it's like once that decision's made, it taking a counter rarely works out.
Yeah. So then what are some things that lawyers who are interested in making a lateral move, what are some good interview questions that you would prep them for to help identify fit or help identify that this is, you know, a firm that they would enjoy and get the type of support and comp and everything that they're not getting at their current home?
So one is be prepared to answer the question, why are you looking?
Okay.
Number one, having a solid answer for that. And then number two is going into an interview and being able to articulate, why are you interested in our firm? Because if a candidate just says, oh, I'm looking for, you know, more money, I'm looking for more support, it's like, okay, you didn't do any research.
Yeah.
You didn't spend any time learning who we are. And that's important. You know, you have to, you know what they're looking for as well on both sides. And if you don't, it just, you know, oftentimes leads to the client assuming there's no interest. I can't tell you how many times an interview ends, candidate calls me like, yeah, I loved it. It was a great interview. I'm super interested. Client calls and says, yeah, they didn't seem interested. And it's like, okay, I just killed the deal.
Yeah.
So just verifying interest, verbalizing interest. I always have candidates at the end of an interview say, hey, what are the next steps? Or, you know, I'd love to come in and meet the team, or, you know, whatever it is to verbalize interest and not assume that they understand that you're interested in moving forward, but to actually verbalize that.
Yeah. So being prepared to answer questions. And then I was also alluding to questions that candidates may want to ask the firm. So can they ask about comp? Can they ask about transparency? Can they ask about culture? You know, what sort of off limits and what are things that it's important for them and would impress the firm that they did ask?
Yeah. So on the comp, I always recommend holding off.
Okay.
Until you understand if it's a right fit or not. Okay. Because again, it's, you know, it's like talking marriage on the first date. It's like, right. Okay, you know, yeah, we're not there yet. But yeah, in terms of culture, you know, just to making sure that it's a fit. I mean, obviously you want to get the big pieces out to start so that, you know, five interviews into it, you find out, oh, they have a closed comp. That's not going to work. I want open comp. So yeah, it's okay to ask that question in terms of open, closed, or, you know, how often do I have to be in the office? You know, things that are important to you. But yeah, I would not necessarily talk comp on the first interview, first couple.
But I like what I like where you're getting, like you're finding out what their sort of culture is. You're finding out about open or closed eventually. Maybe you're also finding out what their support looks like so that you're not walking into the same situation you're trying to leave.
Yeah. 100% agree with that.
Okay. And one thing that always intrigues me too is when they say, oh, you're going to, you know, we're going to bring you on and you're going to head up our new Chicago office, or you're going to be the practice group for this Chicago office. And they're trying to like start something, you know, in a new area or something. And I question that sometimes. I go, you know, there is no support. You're the one that they're looking to develop and manage all the people when you just want to build a book of business. And people get excited because it's like new and it's shiny and it's exciting that they're going to be, you know, running a practice group or they're going to be starting a new office. And I always kind of caution lawyers because I go, you're taking on a lot.
Yeah. And not only that, but oftentimes it's not compensated and certainly not a direct correlation, meaning you're tasked with opening an office. You spend an hour, you know, you're not getting that $500 bill rate. you don't know. I mean, there's no direct correlation in terms of revenue that you're bringing in. And I agree with you that it is, you have to understand the plan and the expectations from the firm side, because I've had many candidates say that, hey, I'm the practice lead, but they're not supporting it. They're not putting the money, they're not putting the time, the resources, et cetera. It's like, okay, what's the point of that?
And this is I don't want to say a little self-serving because I'm in the business. Obviously, my job is to make, $1 million plus rainmakers. That's why I'm in the trenches every day, is to get people with no books to get to 250 to 500 to a million, a million to get to two and three and five and all that and above. The difference in comp for those service attorneys that may listen to this or see a video or something, what's the di if you can, just give some averages or some ballpark, someone with a $1 million book with equal number of hours, let's say 2,000, 1,500, 2,000 hours to someone who's doing the same amount of hours with no book, just servicing other people's. Is there an average of how much more a lawyer makes with that $1 million plus book?
Yeah, I mean, it could be up to 20% higher from the numbers I've seen.
Okay.
And not only that, but it's control. I mean, it's control over your practice. You're not at the beck and call of someone else.
Yeah, your clients,
You,
you're in charge, you're the one delegating down.
right?
Okay. And
And
then, yeah.
you just have, a bigger seat at the table where you're bringing in, revenue that the firm wouldn't have. Whereas if you're relying on someone to feed you, you're gonna unfortunately have to do what they ask you to do.
Yeah. And and if things go badly, the firm gets acquired or your manager's a tyrant or whatever it might be, you've got, the keys to the kingdom to move lead, to call up Brian and say, "Hey man, I need to
Yeah.
move." And, again, million is, I think, a starting point. I mean, what are you seeing with the folks that have three to five? I mean, what's the interest in those folks from the firms you work with?
I mean, you're looking at a smaller platform, smaller book, obviously, that tends to go across the board. I would say, yeah, $1 million certainly gets you into the, call it the Am Law 200 to, 125-ish.
Yeah.
Certainly, as you get into the larger platforms, they'll want, multiple seven figures.
Okay. Well, really interesting stuff. I'm always intrigued by what recruiters are seeing and dealing with and helping their clients with and trying to put it all together. Let's move on to our last little bit of segment as we wrap up the show. And what's Brian's big mistake?
It depends on who you ask.
Well, yeah, I saw your golf game, so that's one, but nah, I just lost
That's one. Although the
my
next
chops.
time you see me, hopefully that'll be different. So from 2016, and again, this is before we got into legal, or before we acquired Shapiro Legal Search. We hired from 2016 until 2020 during COVID, hired about 80 recruiters. They were across different areas. And again, that's when our business was focused on accounting, but we hired, some folks that did engineering. We had legal then, other areas, and we just weren't market masters.
Yeah.
That was a huge mistake, just because, we're everywhere. Now we're super focused, super niched. And yeah, that's a mistake that we won't make again.
Yeah.
Just become market masters. And I assume the same applies to legal. You can't be, everything to everyone. The more niched and focused you are, and the more market master expert in a certain area, you're going to get the calls and you're going to get that business.
Yeah. I mean, you're either thought of for something or you're not thought of at all for anything, is kind
Right.
of the what we're seeing more and more of. So, man, fantastic. Let's take a moment to thank our wonderful sponsors, Rankings.io. We've got Law Her Podcast and of course Legalverse Media. And just want to give a quick shout out to hireparalegals.com. You can go to their website, use the promo code Steve, get 500 off your first hire. Check all of that out in the show notes and go to them and visit their websites. Brian, people want to get in touch with you. What are the best ways for them to reach out?
I'll give you my cell phone. It's and you could text or call. Text is probably better. 312-593-0810. And again, I can shoot you my email if you text me.
Yeah. And check out the show notes. We'll have all that in there as well. And thanks, man. I appreciate you coming on the show and giving us kind of an update on not only the kind of the state of the market, but also what lawyers who are looking to move laterally need to be thinking about from, you know, a number of different sides and views. And I think this to me is super, I'm just always super interested in this because I'm seeing things from one perspective and, you know, bringing on great guests like you allows me to see all these other perspectives. So really, really great. So thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no, definitely. Take care.
All right.
Appreciate it.
You got it. And thank you everybody for hanging out and Be That Lawyer for the last half an hour and change. You know, again, it's not for everybody. If you have a great place that respects you, supports you, and you've got a platform that allows you to grow and be that lawyer and build your book, you stay the course, you know, but if you're starting to see things fall apart and you're going to start, you know, realizing, you know, there's other places and other opportunities. So don't be shy and check it out. And Be That Lawyer, everybody. Take care, be safe, be well. We will talk again soon.
Thanks for listening to Be That Lawyer. Life-changing strategies and resources for growing a successful law practice. Visit Steve's website, Fretson.com, for additional information and to stay up to date on the latest legal business development and marketing trends. For more information and important links about today's episode, check out today's show notes.